Okay, we're talking about Dorkapalooza now, which I have to admit is a line that I've stolen from Bill Simmons. Andy McGeady is with us in studio. He's just back from Boston, where he was at the Sloan Sports Analytical Conference, which is hosted by Massachusetts Institute of Technology, or MIT, and ESPN. It's kind of the biggest shindig in the world for people who like data and sport.
Yeah, and Dorkapalooza is a pretty good way to put it. The other way I saw it put before I went over was Zach Slayton for Forbes said it was the Super Bowl of sports analytics. And it's a really good way to sum it up because the Super Bowl is the biggest sporting event in the field, but it's also got glitz, it's got glamour. And although we're talking about sports data, there's an MIT-hosted conference but sponsored by ESPN. So you've got a huge, big stage. There's 2,700 people looking at all these guys. It's like a giant TV set with loads of sports nerd watching at the same time.
And who shows up?
It's a really good cross section from sports. Firstly, you've got some celebrities who took their beginning in sports. So there's someone like Nate Silver. He started out in baseball, but then went on his best known now for his work predicting US presidential elections. Then you've got Daryl Morey, who's the co-chair of the conference. He's the GM of the Houston Rockets in the NBA. You've got Mark Cuban, basketball owner, again, a guy who made his money outside sports first and then went back in. After that, you've got representatives from various sports teams across the world in different leagues. So 29 out of the 30 NBA teams were represented there, as well as 18 of the 32 NFL clubs, as well as Premier League teams, Arsenal, Reading, Manchester City, then Rugby League in Australia, the English Cricket Board. There's a huge cross-section of the sporting community, both professional and what you might call the analytical community, as well as vendors and students hoping to get a job in sports.
You were there, so having witnessed what you saw, do you think everybody tells the truth about what they're doing? Because that's the big question about if Billy Beane hadn't told everybody, Michael Lewis in particular, about what he was doing at the Oakland A's, then he might have had another couple of years before everybody copped that it was statistics driven and trying to find value. Whereas it strikes me that the analytics community almost has this kind of weird sense of one-upmanship where they're desperate to tell everybody, oh, we've got this secret. What's your secret? Oh, I have to tell you what it is, because otherwise then you won't know how amazing I am.
That's a really interesting point, and it's something which a number of delegates said has changed as the conference has got bigger. So the conference started 7 years ago with 200 people in a couple of classrooms in MIT, and this was essentially an amateur analytics community meeting to share ideas. It's now become an event, and as such, you've got these guys who are coming along to the event. They've got great ideas, but they can't discuss it with people within their own sport.
Yeah.
Okay? Now, a baseball front office guy can have a chat with an NBA front office guy and talk about areas which they know are similar and also non-competitive to each. But you will never get that with two baseball guys, for example. It even goes beyond that, because if you imagine when Moneyball came out, I think that was about 2003, that was the start of the big analytics revolution in sports, or at least the public revolution. Since then, it's become almost a closed-door approach. So the best amateur analysts are getting hired by front office teams. So the Houston Astros in Major League Baseball, they've hired two or three guys from the outsider analytic community to work for them. Now, as soon as they work for a private organization, their ideas are no longer public and never will be. And that is the big key thing which they're going to have to manage. Otherwise, this thing might wither and just become a publicity event as opposed to an event of learning.
Tell us a little bit about what the lessons are for sport in this part of the world and the journey that the American sports in particular have been on, because we kind of have this assumption that all American sports embraced stats at the same time and they're all therefore at the same level, but that's not the case.
No, it's not. They did embrace them at different times, and it's something which I think those of us who follow soccer, rugby and Gaelic football and hurling as well, because there's people who do good work in that, it's something which we should look at, because we're essentially getting a little bit of a window into the future. So baseball embraced what we'll call advanced statistics and the use of those in how they cover the sport and how the teams manage the sport, let's say 10 to 12 years ago. In the NBA, it's maybe 5 to 7 years. But in the National Football League, in American football, it's really only 2 to 3 years. And even then, talking to guys, you know, football writers over there, they say it's a really tough battle, especially when you get into the big media guys. Some of them, they just don't want to know. So when we're looking at that, we're kind of at the start of that journey. You've seen, I think, in the Six Nations this year, a lot more statistics go up on screen. They're up to, but with an Accenture branding around them.
Yeah.
And that's something which I think we'll see more of. It's something I've tried to do in rugby writing. It's something which people like, you know, Michael Cox and Jonathan Wilson are trying to use a lot more statistics in their coverage of soccer. And that is slowly breaking through to the mainstream. And, you know, I think fans want to see more of that. They want to trust what is happening in the field rather than what they're told is happening, and what the eye can play tricks in a team sport.
Is that the case in America? Has the use of statistics helped to engage fans more? Has that improved their experience of watching sport and being supporters of teams?
It depends who you talk to. People I know there, I think it's probably sort of a self-selecting bias. I'm probably friends with people who like stats. But talking to sports writers and even media hosts over there, like Joe Posnanski, very well-known American sports writer, he's all in favour of going in with stats, because he believes from talking to guys who read his stuff that they want to understand more about what they're seeing. So, for example, we see the same thing in rugby all the time, where the coach in the interview after the game is asked, you know, okay, how'd your team play? And he says, well, he gives a bland answer to start, sort of a thing he'll roll off for the tape, but he'll then say, we'll have to go back and watch the video during the week. Rugby, American football, and even soccer to a slightly lesser extent, they're incredibly complicated games. And if someone scores the touchdown or someone scores the winning try, it might not be obvious to you or me watching live at the time who was really responsible for making that break. Was it a great block in American football? Was it a great dummy that we didn't see? A great decoy run in rugby? These are the things which guys can look at this after and give us a bit more insight into what's really happening.
That's more the tape analysis role, though, than just the specific statistics of and the data that is mined. Is rugby a sport that has enough set pieces, the way that obviously baseball has a set piece, and everybody is in very specific...
It's a one versus one game to an extent.
Yeah. Even with American football, the yards are the thing. You know, everybody is lined up either in a 3-4, a 4-3, or whatever the defensive and offensive formations are. But in rugby, because the ball can be in open play so much, there's always going to be a gap, I guess, between how much the statistics will tell us and how much the players themselves are capable of influencing things beyond pre-programmed statistics.
Absolutely. And I think what you're talking about is the ability to separate things into discrete events, which you can say, right, okay, well, A won this battle, or A did this and B did this because A did that. In rugby, you do have certain things. You've got a gain line, for example. It's something we don't see on the field, but it's key in terms of saying, well, has this team broken the gain line when they've had the ball? It's all very well having possession. As, for example, Ireland had a huge amount of possession against Scotland. It was a freak result. However, the interesting thing about the game is that possession doesn't win you matches on its own. There's a lot of things that happen after that. In fact, studies have shown that territory is a far more influential stat than possession in terms of determining the victor of a game. But yeah, we can tell certain things, and teams are using this in some interesting ways. Okay, so teams are signing contracts with Opta. Opta are major statistics providers. There's other similar guys doing that, but they're probably the biggest. What they can give them is the ability to drill down into the stats of players in different parts of the world who they would likely never ever come in contact with. Now, if you're a smaller club and you don't have the resources to compete with the Leinsters, with the Munsters, with the Toulouses for the biggest signings, this can afford you an opportunity to see players who you might not have seen before, because you've seen, okay, for the last 10 games, they've busted some unbelievable carry stats. Now, you're not going to sign a guy based on the stats alone, but it can give you a pointer to look. You then ask for tape. You might even fly a guy out to see him for real. But maybe you find a guy, a little jewel in the rough, someone with the money ball principle, someone who the market has undervalued.
Okay, so that's one of the immediate applications that you can see happening from a rugby perspective. Just to go back to what's happening in American sports, obviously, again, there is a sense, oh, this is a movement which has reached a peak. But presumably, again, there must be innovations. What was the main buzz at the conference this time?
There was two main themes that came out of it. The first was a major buzz about XY data. XY data is it's about spatial analysis of teams. So in when you see heat maps, for example, we're starting to see some of them in coverage of soccer. You see where the players are in the field all the time. So these are cameras. There's a couple of different methods of doing it, but in principle, you're looking at cameras that pick up all the moving parts on the field, be it the players, be it the ball, about 25 times a second. It gathers a huge amount of data. And we're only on the start of that journey in all sports of analysing what that can give us. basketball are a little bit ahead because it's a smaller game. There's less combination. That's 5-on-5 at all times. Soccer, there's a lot of people doing good work there. I don't know much about what they're doing that in rugby, if at all. But that's the first main thing. There's a lot of people really excited across all sports about what that can tell them. The second thing is about the relationship between the guys who are doing analytics and the guys who are actually managing the team.
Yeah.
That relationship is interesting because it kind of mirrors...
This is the whole drama in Moneyball. There would have been no drama without it.
Exactly. And it's still there. So you've got... there was Parag Marathe. He's the COO, the Director of Operations for the San Francisco 49ers. He said, like, a 5 out of 10 piece of analysis is far more powerful than a perfect piece of analysis if it's presented the wrong way. Because you can alienate an entire room of coaches and they'll never talk to the analyst again. Some analysts who've got a background in sports have a massive advantage there.
Did he talk at all about giving up the statistical genius that was Alex Smith in favour of the second year, we don't know what the hell's going to happen, Kaepernick?
He couldn't because at the conference it was before the official start of the football season. He actually literally, I asked him that, he literally could not talk about it. But yeah, I mean, that's something which they'll have looked at hard. Like, he's a guy who's been working there for 12 years at the 49ers. He came out of an investment, a consulting firm. But again, hired out of that analytical mindset to add to the front office. And that's where a lot more guys are coming from these days, into the front office side of American sport.
So basically, the geeks need better PR was the message coming from the conference, and that's going to be an important battle to win over the next couple of years.
Yeah, they need to know their audience. They need to know who they're dealing with, and importantly, they need to know what they want, because the analyst might have found this brilliant thing and he thinks it's brilliant, but it might not be anything to do with what the team or that coach is looking for.
Andy McGeady, thanks very much. For more, you can check out andymcgeady.com for all of Andy's writing. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Chair.